Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, and this week we're bringing you an exclusive interview with one of the greatest cricketers ever to play the game.
And balls in! What a beauty from Kellis!
Over the course of the next hour, Neil Manthorpe speaking with the South African legend Jack Kellis about his phenomenal career, which saw him become one of the all-time leading run scorers, as well as life away from the crease as head coach of the Kolkata Knight Riders.
That's through. That'll be four. He's got some time, hasn't he, Jack Kellis? And another Test 50. The great all-rounder.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the great Jack Kellis.
Well, he's the third highest test run scorer of all time with 13,289, behind Sachin Tendulkar and Ricky Ponting, but he has taken a few more wickets than either of them, 292 of them, and 200 catches.
Kellis connects it. Stewie McGill can do nothing at fine leg.
Throw in 328 one-day internationals with another 11,500 runs and 270-odd wickets. He was also the first man to win the IPL as both a player and a coach.
Oh, he's hit that well. That's beautifully played. Short delivery and smashed away in front of square for four. Jacques Kellis means business here.
It's no wonder that many people regard him as the greatest multi-format cricketer of all time. Jacques Kellis, welcome to the Cricket Collective.
Hi, man. It's morning.
Given that you've had all this time on your hands, we spent 20 years watching you break record after record, and we'd always ask you how you felt and what these records meant to you, and you always said, I'll have time to reflect on it once I've retired. Well, it's been 7 years retired from Test cricket, 6 years retired from one day cricket. So have you been doing any reflecting on all those records?
I'm still reflecting. I haven't, to be honest. I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to, but you know, it is something that I am proud of what I achieved. I think my proudest achievements, if I do look back, is, you know, the stuff that we achieved as a team, beating Australia in Australia for the first time, in England, England in England for the first time.
Edged. There it is. South Africa have won. They've won this match. They've won the series. And they go to the top of the world rankings.
You know, winning that first trophy, which people do forget about, the ICC tournament in where was it, in Dubai or Sharjah, where we won that first ICC tournament. So
Bangladesh, you know, wasn't it?
Yeah, or Bangladesh, sorry, yeah. So yeah, those I think are the proudest moments of what I look back at and the fun that we had in doing that. You know, even surprisingly, a couple of our pre-season tours where we went to Switzerland, I think it was before that England series where we beat them there. So sort of looking back, those are the memories that sort of stick out first and foremost rather than the individual memories of you know, of the 20 years.
I know you always said you weren't a stats man, you're not a stats man, but everybody else is when it comes to your career because the numbers are so eye-popping. But and I'm not suggesting that you go and open up Wisden and look at your career. I don't suppose you've ever done that in numbers, But you know what the numbers are. Aren't there any that you think, bloody hell, that is a lot?
To be honest, I think probably playing for 20 years. you know, when you play your first game for South Africa, you try and perform well enough to, you know, help the team win in that game and then hopefully get picked for the next game. And to do that for 20 years is certainly something that I never thought I would achieve. You know, not many people get to play for their country in whatever sport for 20 years. So that's something that I am really proud of. And yes, along the way, certain individual performances. And it's always the ones that, you know, lead the team to winning that stand out most. It's not always the ones that are the highest scores or the highest number of wickets taken. Those are certainly the ones that stand out and give me the greatest reward.
When did you know you were going to be a cricketer?
That's a tough one. I think they were in my trick year. There was a Craven Week trials and there was a South African under 17 cricket tour to the UK. And strangely enough, I probably enjoyed rugby a lot more, but knew that I was far more talented in cricket than rugby. And sort of made the choice then that, you know, I'm going to give this game of cricket a go and let's see where it takes us. Give it a couple of years. And if things don't go according to plan, perhaps look at perhaps studying something at varsity and that. But, you know, I managed to get off to a good start once I left school, played some club cricket in England, which, you know, helped me grow as a person. And then from there on, when I started playing provincially, that was a kind of the time when I realized that, you know, this is my profession and this is the way or what I'm going to do for the next however many years.
Okay, so there was a moment where you knew that you were good enough. Was there another moment where you thought, I really am onto something here, where you sort of realised that, you know, that you were a wee bit better than average?
I think in any avenue that you go into, whether it's sport or business, you know, there's that little bit of doubt that creeps in until you do perform at that level. And, you know, you want to perform to prove to yourself that you are good enough to play at that level. The first one being provincial level. That I could perform at that level. And once I sort of put in one or two performances, which fortunately at provincial level came pretty soon in the first couple of games, you know, it made me believe, and I think it made my teammates believe that I was good enough. And then, you know, once I was selected for South Africa, again, those doubts creep in. Am I good enough to play at this level? Have I got what it takes to be at this level? And it perhaps took a little bit longer at international level. And I think the first time I started believing that was in one-day cricket ahead of test cricket because I'd managed to get a few scores in the one-day side and struggled a little bit at test cricket. And until you get that first performance, which for me was against Pakistan in Pakistan.
What a shot. It wasn't too short that Jacques Cullis has just flicked it away onto the onside for four.
I think I got 60 or 70 and suddenly I believed that I was good enough to be at that level and proved to my teammates that I was good enough to be at that level. And then I realised that, you know, I can, let's see how far I can go. Let's use my talent. I've always lived by, you know, if you're going to do something, do it properly. Otherwise, don't do it at all. And that's kind of how I sort of started and kicked on with my career.
Talking of one-day cricket, I was looking back at your debut and it put a big smile on my face because it just sort of reminded me of how different the game was when all those years ago. It's 1996. Your debut was against England at your beloved Newlands in Cape Town. And South Africa made 211 for eight and defended it.
How the game has changed. I remember back in those days, the coaches used to say, well, don't come back to the change room if you get caught on the boundary in between the middle overs. You were never allowed to take on fielders in those days. And you had to sort of, you know, play the waiting game until the last few overs and then fire towards the end. Geez, the game's changed now completely.
It has. I mean, and that wasn't even unprecedented. You know, that sort of happened. South Africa did that all the time. I mean, if you put 220 on the board, you reckoned you had the game half won.
Definitely. You know, the scores of 250 there in those days were match-winning scores, and you defended that quite easily. When a team got to a run, a ball chasing a total, it was almost impossible to get. So, you know, those were the sort of the mindsets of you know, what the players were thinking in those days. And the fielding side, as soon as it got to, you always worked towards, let's get to a run, a ball, and you knew the game was over. Done. They couldn't chase that. Strange to look back at those times.
You mentioned your 20-year international career. 20 years. I mean, for a batsman, okay. For a spinner, possibly. But But a fast bowling all-rounder, it is unprecedented in the history of the game. So I wanted to ask you, how many games do you reckon you played fully fit? And the reason I ask is because I remember Graham Smith, when he was your captain, once saying, I'm very happy to take 50% of Jacques Callis. If he's walking on one leg, I'll have him. But I mean, you must have played through a bunch of injuries.
Definitely. I think most sportsmen do. I think there's probably a handful of times when you feel your body's at 100% and you're exactly where you want to. So you're always playing with some kind of niggle, something sore, but you find a way to get through it. And, you know, I was fortunate enough that I had a body that stayed pretty fit throughout my career and didn't have too many major injuries. I think I had a stress fracture early on in my career from probably bowling on the indoor surfaces, you know, and learned a lesson there to be careful when bowling on indoor surfaces. You know, the surfaces have certainly improved in today's world, but back in the day, it was still something new. They were quite hard and got an injury there. But other than that, I didn't have too many major injuries. I had a tennis elbow, which, you know, stuck with me for a couple of months. But, you know, very fortunate that I missed the odd game here and there, but nothing over a long period of time. I think I also got to learn, you know, how to manage myself and my body, and coaches and teammates trusted the way I went about things, which, you know, I was very fortunate enough. And, you know, I also believed in training well. You know, you don't need to train for 3 hours. Put in your half an hour work, but do it at match intensity and then get out of there and, you know, get your body looked after, make sure your body's prepared. I think that was as important to me as getting the skills right, was trying to get my body as close to being as good as it can be. And obviously when you do get those needles, you just got to push through it.
There was one test match where Graham Smith announced that you would play just as a batsman because you weren't fit to bowl. And I don't know what the score was. It was something like the opposition were 250 for two in the second innings. And sure enough, he throws the ball to you and you haul yourself through half a dozen overs. Do you remember that test match?
I don't. but yeah, I find it hard to play only as a batter, I must be honest. And I think when you do both throughout your whole career, you kind of get used to that and you want to be involved and trying to make a difference in the game. And I think being all-rounder, you know, you're fortunate enough to have that ability to, if you do fail at the bat, you've got a chance at the ball and vice versa. So, and to stand next to Graham Smith and Mark Boucher for a whole day, not getting a break from listening to them talk all day, that was hard work. So, yeah, I'd rather go and bowl.
A really interesting point about the training. And as a senior player, you, of course, could do exactly what you knew that you needed to do in terms of preparation. If you were going to bowl, you would bowl rather two overs at you know, full pace or bat at full intensity and then take it easy and have a bottle of water and sit in the shade. But young players can't do that, can they? So it's very, very hard for young players to manage their workload. And if the coach makes them run 20 laps of the ground, then when they really should be having a rest, it's difficult to say, well, actually, no, coach, I'm done, thanks.
Yeah, that's the tough part about being a young player, I suppose. You know, you want to impress the coaches and the senior players and that, and it's a fine line. I'd say generally the youngsters don't know their body and their game as well as the senior players. So, yeah, that's the tough one as a coach. And sometimes you've got to trust the player and give them their space and time if they are feeling a little bit tired because, you know, like I said, my policy has always been rather give me short and sharp rather than long and no intensity. So there are times when you can see when the guys are just being lazy and that's when you push them. And then there's times when you have to, as a coach, to sit back and say, well, I'm going to trust my player. And at the end of the day, if they don't perform in the next few games, you know, you can go back to them and say to them, well, you didn't quite put in the work that perhaps you might have needed. And in a way, it puts them under pressure to perform in the next game because you have given them, you know, that chance to sit down and do it their way. And it puts, like I said, it puts them under pressure. Then they've got to come and perform. So in a way, it's quite a good thing. And I have seen that it does work. So the fine line. Yeah.
The Silver House continues. And now Callis brings up the three figures. He's all class, Jacques Callis. and that is Test Century number 44.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the South African great Jack Hallis. Still to come, he discusses why he decided to retire despite scoring his 45th century in what turned out to be his farewell test. But first, he talks about the teams he enjoyed facing as a player.
The intensity of your concentration and your focus when you were batting, many opposition bowlers, I remember Graham Swan particularly, found it unnerving. You know, there was just absolute lack of interaction. They couldn't burst your bubble. Was that a skill that you developed, or was that just, did that just come naturally?
I think naturally I'm a fairly quiet person. So from that point of view, it was quite easy for me to keep quiet. Look, make no mistake, I heard what they had to say, and many a time it was quite funny. And sort of inside I had a chuckle or two. But, you know, a word has never got a better out. It's always the ball that gets the better out. And at the end of the day, when the bowler starts his run-up, they've got to be quiet in any case. So what they say in between balls really doesn't matter. So, I used to listen to it, have a giggle, and I knew it would never affect me because I had a routine that I went through and stuck to that routine when, you know, the bowler got to the back of his mark. So, yeah, that didn't affect me, but there were some funny chirps along the way, I must admit, especially from the Aussies.
Waiting, and that will do it. Places that beautifully, a lovely way to bring up the highest score against Australia and your 23rd Test match 100.
You had some tumultuous battles in Test cricket against the big three, England, Australia and India, and a few others. I remember a couple of hard Test matches against Pakistan, hard series there, particularly in Pakistan, where you scored 100 in both Tests in Karachi. But when you think of hard Test cricket, really tough Test cricket, which Test matches or series or opponents come to mind?
Australia in Australia, always tough. England in England and India in India. As always, the tough battles and ones that you wanted to play in because you were testing yourself against the best and, you know, sometimes the toughest conditions. Strangely enough, I do feel that in South Africa, our wickets are probably the hardest to bat on in the world because they go sideways and up and down. So, you know, even at home, we had some great battles against some really good bowling attacks and you know, from the bowling point of view our batting point of view, our batters knew how to cope on those wickets, which made it, you know, obviously quite tough for the opposition. But especially in South Africa against some good bowling attacks, there were some great contests that we had.
Which individuals come to mind? Who did you particularly enjoy playing against or respect?
I think the best seam bowler, just by a little bit, was Wasim Akram.
Out, bowled him out, didn't need to appeal. I think that was just a cry of delight. So, Jacques Cullis on his way. And South Africa lose their first wicket.
You know, the skill that he had with both the new ball and the old ball and the type of bowler that he was didn't give much away from that point of view. And look, there were plenty others that were exceptional and had great battles against. From a spinner's point of view, I think Shane Warne stood out, you know, both with ability and with his mouth. He was great fun to play against, and he would probably just stood out a little bit compared to the other spinners. But also, again, there have been plenty that we had great battles with. But those two were the bowlers in their various categories that I thought just stood out from the rest.
At the very beginning of your career, in Test matches again, you were playing against an Australian team which had a top six who all averaged about 50 or over 50. And at the beginning of your career in the late 90s, the South African top six barely averaged 40. And it was an obsession of the media. People like me used to mention it all the time to people like you. And it became a necessary measure of success. And I mean, there were two Test matches. You went to Zimbabwe and played two Test matches, and there was almost a kind of bloody-minded determination. You said, right, okay, I'll get that average up. And you scored 400 runs in two Test matches without being dismissed. And suddenly your average went from something like 37 to 45. Did you remember that being a sort of national obsession, that our top six, South Africa's top six, wasn't averaging 50 or 40?
I think we're fortunate in our day that we didn't have as much social media, and a lot of the guys didn't read the papers or any of that, but we knew it was around. And I think more importantly, as much as the media was saying we had to get there, I think we wanted to get there as players as well, because We knew in order for us to compete against the best teams in the world, we couldn't be 90 for five all the time. We needed, you know, our batters to be getting in. And when you get in, don't get 60s and 70s, get big 100s. And then once you get your 100, obviously try and get 150, 200, et cetera, et cetera. That's how you win games. And so we did sit down as a batting group. It could have been, I think, ahead of the West Indian series where we had a camp in Bloemfontein. And I think Hansie sat us all down, if I remember, and said, we need to get this sorted out. We need to get our batters getting big runs. And our averages will then get it where it needs to be to compete against the rest of the world. So, yes, it was something that we sat down and said, we need to improve on that.
Kluivert on strike. There it is. They go. This will be out, surely. Ah, it's out. It's going to be run out. Ah, oh, that's it. South Africa out. Donald didn't run. I cannot believe it. Australia go into the World Cup final. Ridiculous running with two balls to go. Donald didn't go. Kluivert come. What a disappointing end for South Africa.
We haven't even spoken about one day cricket very much, apart from your debut. Five World Cups and very nearly a sixth. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But five World Cups, are they in any way a source of small regret that you didn't win one?
100%. Most definitely. It's the one thing that I'm, you know, look back and sad of, that I wasn't part of a team that won a World Cup. I think you'd be a very rich man if you could find out why. Yeah, you know, I've got my views on it. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the Tokas tag. You know, I don't believe it's that. I actually think it's the opposite. I think we wanted it too much when we got to those big games, in that, you know, players went outside of their roles. And by that, I mean, if a guy scores 100 in one day period off 120 balls, in those games, he was trying to get it to run a ball. And a bowler that was holding was trying to get wickets. So I think we wanted to be that player that made a difference in those big games too much, and didn't trust ourselves as a team. That's what I think were the issues. And in terms of that, put ourselves under a little bit more pressure, which we weren't doing in the other games where we just trusted one another. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. It's my theory on it. But yeah, do look back at all those World Cups, and especially the one in England, where, you know, I felt that was the one for us to win. Look back and say, if only, many a times, yeah. And, you know, a lot of people blame Alan Donald at the end there. But, you know, at the end of the day, Alan shouldn't have been batting there. One of the batters should have been batting there, you know, with Lance. And we would have easily have chased it down. But, yeah, you can't expect tail enders to win you games like that. It's, you know, it's not fair to blame them. It's the batters' blame to take for not getting us home.
I remember the great Bob Woolmer when he took over 2 years before that 99 World Cup. He said, I want this team, I want them to have an average of 50 caps each, which I think he achieved. And he said, and I want 9 batting options and 7 bowling options. I thought that he was, you know, he sounded like he was coming from a different planet. But in fact, there were 10 batsmen. Alan was the only kind of non-batsman in the team. And at least 7 bowling options. That was a hell of a team, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It had all bases covered. Didn't matter what wickets that we played on. And it was probably the most balanced side that South Africa's had. And like I said, I think that was the World Cup for us to win. And sadly, we couldn't get over the line. Look, in World Cups, you do need a little bit of luck to go your way. And we probably didn't play those big moments as well as we could have if we look back at it. And didn't make the correct choices at the right time. And, you know, you always think, okay, well, we've learned from that one. Next World Cup, we won't make the same mistakes. And we probably didn't make the same mistakes. We made some other mistakes. Unfortunately, we've always just made mistakes in big tournaments, which I do believe South Africa is going to win a World Cup sometime. And then we can all celebrate, and all the ex-players and that will celebrate with the team that wins it, because, you know, we'll feel that we were part of that journey. But hopefully it comes soon.
Guttall's going to push for two. They've got to go. It's got to go to the keeper's end. He's got it. England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins. By the barest of all margins. Absolute ecstasy for England. Agony for New Zealand.
What have you made of England's transformation from between 2015 and 2019? In the space of 4 years, they've become an unrecognisably different team. I mean, 2015, they were ordinary. Owen Morgan and the Brains Trust there have just done an amazing job, haven't they?
They have. you know, we said it that, you know, that 2015, I think they sat down, they came out with a different game plan. And, you know, when you do that, it you know, it takes a lot of guts because they came out and said they're going to play an aggressive form of cricket. And didn't matter what the situation was, they were going to carry on playing like that. And they even got bowled out a couple of times very cheaply, and the media got stuck into them. And they just stuck to their task and knew that in 4 years' time, they would hopefully find the correct balance on how to play one-day cricket. And they probably still erred a little bit on the aggressive side, but that's the way they chose. And for Owen Morgan and Trevor Bayliss to turn a setup like that around is, you know, magnificent to see where they are today and the type of cricket that they're playing. They basically the side that the Aussies were in the early 2000s that, you know, set the trends and, you know, moved the game forward. You know, you look back throughout history and Sri Lanka kind of changed the way people played with Jayasurya coming in and smacking it in that World Cup. So there's always been sort of trends where teams try and go out of the box and try and play differently to other teams. And that's exactly what England did.
I wanted to ask you about two, you would think, completely contrasting subjects, your time in county cricket and your time with the Kolkata Knight Riders, before that Royal Challengers Bangalore in the IPL. As I say, you could hardly think of two more contrasting assignments, you know, playing in front of three men and a dog and 50,000 people. But in some ways, they're similar because they're pretty intense, aren't they? I mean, did you find either of them a bit of a grind?
I didn't, no, because early on in my career when I did play county cricket, especially when I was at Middlesex, I wasn't established in the national side and kind of used that to hone my skills. And, you know, when you go there as an overseas pro, there's pressure on you to perform. And that pressure is not quite as what it's like playing international cricket, but you know, it's good pressure to put yourself under. And sort of came through that experience at Middlesex, becoming a lot better player. And then a couple of years later, went to Glamorgan and probably was a little bit more established in the South African setup. So I could sort of sit back and enjoy it a little bit more. But still, you feel the pressure of being an overseas pro. And again, you know, you put yourself under pressure. And if you can perform in those instances, you know, it gives you a lot of confidence going into when you start playing for your country that you've been able to perform under some pressure. And playing in different conditions and that and some really good opposition that you play against. So that was a massive learning curve for me. And then playing in India, I think, you know, when we started the IPL sort of 1 and 2, I remember before the first game, we sort of sat down, I think we were playing against Kolkata actually in Bangalore. And we sort of worked out, now we think in 20 overs, maybe 140, 150 were a good score. And Baz McCullum came out and smashed 120 or whatever it was. And we were chasing, I think it was 230. We quickly had to change those ideas and plans. And but yeah, even in the first few years, you know, scores weren't anywhere near to where they are now. And completely changed the way that cricket's played in all formats, I think, the T20 game, especially in India. And, you know, playing in front of 80,000 people in Eden Gardens, in a provincial game, that's...
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Unbelievable. And then to have those 80,000 cheer for you and not against you was even better. So, you know, teachers, I think that's why Indian cricket's been so good, because the youngsters are playing in front of those big crowds, playing against some, you know, world-class players and sharing a dressing room with with players that have you know, huge experience. So that whole IPL thing has been incredible for Indian cricket. And I think for international players as well, because international players now are playing a lot better in India as well. So it has worked both ways.
That's well played. Very well played indeed. A quick and very thorough, solid century from Jack Callis, and I think he may well have enjoyed that.
I just felt that I'd, you know, had 18 wonderful years and, you know, woke up and said, you know, I think it's time. Now, I think it is the right time. I think there's always going to be questions whether it is right or isn't right. In my mind, I'm 100% convinced that it is.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the South African great Jack Callis. The all-rounder has been recognised as one of the all-time greats, scoring over 13,000 Test match runs and over 11,000 ODI runs, including 62 centuries at the very highest level. Here he talks to Neil Manthorpe about that farewell Test match against India in 2013. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Just for those people who can't recall how your retirement came about, it was first of all from Test cricket. You retired from Test cricket, but then in 2013 to concentrate on one-day cricket, and your intention was to make it to a sixth World Cup in 2015. But I think the next tour was, if I recall, to Sri Lanka, where it was about 42 degrees and 100% humidity. And I think your body just said, you can't do this. So you retired then a year later for in one day cricket. But how did that process of calling it a day come about? I mean, for you, it wasn't presumably, you know, people often say you'll wake up one morning and just know that it's time to go. How was it for you?
Yeah, pretty much the same according to that. I always said, you know, the day that it becomes a job for me, then, you know, it's time for me to call it quits and let someone else take over. And, yeah, sadly got to that point. I'd like to have gone to another World Cup, but I think to play another year feeling like that just to get to a World Cup wouldn't have been fair to my teammates and to myself, and decided to call it quits then. Yeah, it's, you know, to play for 20 years and then just suddenly stop, it was a big adjustment. But I look back with no regret. I know I made the right call because I don't wake up in the morning going, if only. And that's for me how I know that, you know, I made the right call. Fortunately, in Test cricket, that I finished the way that I did. It was great to finish like that. Would love to have finished at beloved Newlands, but circumstances with that tour and that, you know, made me finish where I started, which is, I suppose, in another way, completing the circle, starting in Durban, ended in Durban. But, you know, fond memories of playing both former, or all three formats. The people that I've met, the places I've been to, memories that I've got, I think, was probably the most important. You know, just thankful that I had a career that spanned that amount of time and had the experiences that I did. And mostly along the way, I was part of a very successful team.
Modesty means that you weren't actually you just said it was nice to finish that way. But just for those who can't remember, you scored 100, Shark. Of all the things that you did in your career, that's probably is my favourite, personally. You scored 100 in your last Test match. That is just special. And, it, you know, I guess if people saying, well, he's still got it, why is he retiring? Then that's probably a very good way to go out.
Yeah, it is. It probably is. I think the body could still go, but, you know, the mind had sort of done it for so long and wanted to settle down and you know, start a family and look at the different aspects in life and what I was going to do after cricket. So, you know, once you start drifting a little bit from a mind's point of view, from that point of view, then I think it's a dangerous period, especially for me, who was totally committed to cricket throughout my career. But, yeah, to finish with 100 like that is certainly one of the special memories that'll stick out for me, and the day still to today, I remember those feelings and those memories, and the people that were there to share it with me. Yeah, and even the opposition from, you know, India giving me the walk of fame onto the field or whatever it's called. You know, those memories sort of stick out, and are right up there with my favorite memories for sure.
I remember at World Cups and various other tournaments and IPLs, for that matter, you'd focus on the game that you were involved in, but But there were plenty of other things you'd rather do than watch another game of cricket, weren't there?
Yeah, I was a big believer in getting away from the game and keeping yourself fresh. So when I wasn't playing, I didn't watch a lot. Unless we're preparing for a tour or something, you'd have a quick squiz at the opposition and that. But I try to get away. And I am a big believer in having something away from the game of cricket or whatever sport you're doing. Mine was perhaps golf or watching movies or spending time with friends and family. So I tended not to watch a lot of cricket. I think as a coach, it changed a little bit because you're always trying to pick up on little things of players. So you tend to watch a little bit more. And I found when I was coaching, I was watching other games, making notes and that. But now that I'm not involved with the IPL, I find I'm not watching too much cricket again, which I've fallen back into that mode. But yeah, always keeping an eye, especially on the South African guys with regards to the guys that I've done some work with the national side. So I do try and keep an eye out on them. And, you know, if there is a thing or two that I do pick up from them, send them a message perhaps to help them out if they accept it or not, you know, it's up to them. But, you know, always trying to help out our boys still.
I don't recall you being spoken about much as a coach before the move from player to head coach at the Knight Riders in the IPL. Did it catch you a bit by surprise?
In a way, yes, and in a way, no. You know, I think towards the latter part of your career as a senior player, you in a way become a bit of a coach because you're trying to help the young players, trying to pass off the knowledge and the culture and all that onto the young guys coming in. So in a way, that sort of opened up the door for me because I enjoyed that part of it. And, it's something that I wish I'd done a little bit more of, certainly from the coaching side while I was playing, because the amount that I've learned coaching, you know, far outweighs what I did as a player because you end up concentrating on so many more players and not only on one person's game. So, the amount that I've learned from coaching is massive. And, you know, I do recommend it to the guys that are playing, even if you go back and do once in a while, you know, you help out at a school or a club and that, you know, just go and pop in and help coach the guys. And it's amazing what you pick up that can actually help your game. I wish I knew when I was playing what I know now as a coach. It certainly would have helped my games in, all formats.
Your reputation in the change room was very similar to the way you went about preparation, because all your teammates say and said at the time and say now, he doesn't say much, but when he does say something, you listen.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that is the type of person I am. It's my personality. And I suppose it's the way that I coached as well. That fortunately, if I did speak, you know, they were so surprised that I was speaking, they actually listened. So kind of helps me when that happens.
You also mentioned golf, Jacques. I won't say that it's an obsession because that's just not true. I mean, I've seen people who are obsessed with golf and you're not one of them, but you are very, very keen golfer. What do you make of the and there have been a few, haven't there? There's at least 10 professional cricketers who have tried to change careers and become professional golfers. And needless to say, none of them have made it successfully. But is that something that ever crossed your mind?
Most definitely not. I've been fortunate enough to play in a lot of pro-ams, and you see how good these pros really are. They really are different level, and it's an absolute pleasure to play with these guys and see how good they are, and you realise how average you are. But certainly golf has been something that's kept me competitive. I think I've always been a competitive person from the day I was born. I remember playing cricket in the back garden with my sister and try to beat her as badly as I can just because I wanted to win, which has always stuck by me that I want to win, and I'm a bad loser. I hate losing. And I've just found that golf's given me that competitiveness that, you know, that I had with the cricket where, you know, if I can get out there and play against mates and try and beat them. And I think that's why I'm so attracted to the game of golf, is because, you know, it keeps that competitiveness alive in me. And I don't think that competitiveness will ever leave.
Ellis is on 99. Two, and that's the 100. Fantastic innings. Jack Callis points to that number on his back, number 65. He's changed his number, which was originally 3, to 65.
has to do with his father's age, and his father's just been diagnosed with lung cancer. Paying respect to his old man.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and an exclusive interview with the South African legend Jack Callis. If you've missed any of the show so far, you can download the podcast from the following on feed from all good podcast providers. But in the final part of the programme, Callis discusses what it was like growing up and recalls some of the entertaining stories from his childhood.
Go back to your childhood and tell us about your father, Henry. He had traditional values. I think I was going to say he was a disciplinarian, but that would be unkind. But I mean, he made you, well, he encouraged you to iron your whites and keep your boots clean. And I mean, would that be fair to say he'd be a good traditionalist?
Yeah, very much so. You know, he also, that's where basically where I got it from, that if you're going to do something, do it properly. Otherwise, don't do it at all. And I think throughout my whole life, I've always been an organized person, like to be neat, and do believe that, you know, if you can keep the stuff off the field neat and tidy, you know, it sort of carries on onto the field. So I always try to keep my bats in good order, my whites and shoes clean, all that kind of stuff, because in a way that was preparing me for the field. And yeah, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family where, you know, sport was a massive part of our lives. Unfortunately, lost my mom at a young age, but she also, you know, played some sports. And then my dad was mainly a rugby player, didn't play a lot of cricket, but understood the game of cricket. And never pushed me to go to the nets or to go to the rugby field. You know, it was always me asking that, you know, I wanted to go, and then he would take me. So, you know, as long as I was prepared to go, then we would go. And there was no messing about. If you were going to mess about, then we'd get in the car and come back home, because you weren't committing to doing it properly. And that comes back to, again, if you're going to train at match intensity. And he was a massive supporter of mine and my sister's when, you know, she played her sport and at school. So, yeah, look, if I can be half as good a dad as my dad was to me, that I can be to my son, I think he'll turn out okay. Just fortunate enough to have parents there that, you know, supported us like he did. And yeah, hopefully we're making him proud.
There was a story, I don't know how much it's been exaggerated over the years. He was watching you play for your school first 11, Wynberg Boys High in Cape Town. And the story goes that you played a shot that he strongly disapproved of. You gave your wicket away and he drove home. And at the end of the game, you were looking for your dad and the master in charge of cricket said, "I'm sorry, Jacques, you're walking today." Is that true?
The story actually gets worse. It was during Cape Schools Week at Wynberg, and we were playing, of all schools, we were playing against Selborne. And there was a wicketkeeper by the name of Mark Boucher. He was keeper. I forget who the bowler was. It could have been Justin Wiggle or something like that. And yeah, got an outswing and that pitched to the leg stump, nicked one that, you know, virtually was an unplayable ball in my mind. And unfortunately, Boucher caught it. And the game finished and sort of looked around for the old man, and he'd left. You know, if you want to play a bad shot like that, you must find your own way home, which I thought was a bit harsh, playing a virtually unplayable ball in my mind. I had to find my own way home, yeah. So it taught me a few lessons along the way, but he was hard but fair. You know, I think it's, you know, now that I'm a parent, you see how, you know, how tough it is. And sometimes you have to discipline your kids in whatever way. That was his way of doing it that day. And, you know, I look back at it as a story now and a laugh now. But I suppose at the time when you get left there, yeah, you get a fright.
Yeah, I'm sure it served its purpose. With all the experience that you have, and now with coaching experience as well, and obviously you were the batting coach or the batting consultant for the South African national team. How much would you like to stay involved in the game, and how much would you like to shape the future, and how would you like to shape the future?
Yeah, look, cricket's been in my blood from a young age, so it would be sad not to be involved and give as much knowledge as I can back to the game. So yes, I would like to be involved in whatever way, wherever way possible. You know, I've done it in a way through the foundation that I run for underprivileged kids, to try and help them and give them the opportunity to fulfill their dreams like I had mine fulfilled. So always trying to give back and, you know, help others fulfill their dreams. I've also sort of got involved in the asset management side in the corporate world now to try and broaden my horizons and, you know, see what I can do there. It's always something that's been, that I've been interested in, seeing how money, you know, gets invested and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, working with Dave Rundle there to help me along that path. So, you know, always trying to learn new stuff and help people along the way in cricket. So keeping myself busy and out of trouble, which is always good.
I just wanted to mention the Jacques Callis Scholarship Foundation, because whereas there are many cricketers who create opportunities for young boys to play cricket, yours is a scholarship foundation, and they are founded at traditional cricket playing schools, but the emphasis is on an education, isn't it? And I think it's a huge difference. I mean, it's not a cricket scholarship, it's a scholarship. It's giving opportunities to underprivileged boys to go to good educational schools.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, education is a massive part of it. And we do emphasize that, you know, if you look at how many people have played, and my numbers are probably going to be a little bit off now, but it can't be more than 100 people have played test cricket since readmission. And all parents and kids want their kids to play for South Africa, and kids want to play for South Africa, but it's a minor amount that actually gets that opportunity to play. So you've got to get the education side of it along the way. And so if they don't make it in the cricket side, at least we're giving them a chance to have a good education, help them along the path where they want to go. You know, we've had a few guys that have come through and made it in cricket, made it in rugby, and then made it in the academic side. So we've had success in all three of those, and all three of them have given me as much pleasure seeing them achieve their goals, their dreams in what avenue they've chosen to go in. And, you know, that's given me as much pleasure as certainly when I was playing cricket.
And finally, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I asked you about opponents, tough opponents. Who are the cricketers that you played alongside who you've really admired, who have overcome obstacles to get where they are? I mean, there've been some great, great cricketers, Sean Pollock, Lance Clusen, Dale Steyn, A.B. de Villiers, Mackay Rantini, Hashim Amla.
Flicked away on the leg side, and there it is. The boy from Natal, Hashim Amla, has the record. Highest score by a South African in a test match. Well played.
Hashim Amla, gosh, what was it like batting with him? You used to bat for days together.
Yeah, I think probably Hashim Amla and myself and Gary Kirsten and myself probably had the most time in the middle between those two guys, and it was fantastic to see where Hashim came from. You know, people said that he'd never make it as a cricketer with that backlift and the way he batted. He certainly proved a few people wrong, and you know, it was a pleasure spending time with him in the middle. You know, I think we have similar characters in that very calm and went around our business in a similar way. So it was lovely spending time with him in the middle and to see what he achieved. Mackay and Tini, to see where he came from. And what he ended up achieving. You know, great to see stories like that and inspirational stories like that. But the one for me that I think that I played against that for me had the most talent and he's still playing today is A.B. de Villiers. You know, I think the talent that he's got is exceptional, and, you know, just watching him bat, he makes the game look very easy.
And that's cleared the big side. He wanted him to hit there. A.B. Set and match to Abraham Benjamin de Villiers.
And I think people, you know, there's a lot of people that say you judge a player on how good he is. Would you pay money to go and watch him? And certainly A.B. de Villiers is one that I'd pay a lot of money to go and watch.
And this is the last question. There's a famous photograph, which probably is, I'm not sure if it's famous, because I'm not sure how many people have actually seen it, but you spent about 10 years playing against Australia and being beaten mostly. You know, you lost a lot to Australia. And then in 2008, and it wasn't just your generation, by the way, it was South Africans had been losing in Australia for 100 years. Yeah. Never won a test series in Australia. And then in 2008, it kind of hit you, didn't it? You that record run chase in Perth, you made 414 to win in the fourth innings.
That is the sort of test match you dream of as a player. Take on the world champions in their home turf. And to not just compete, but to win a game like this and to contribute as he has That's a test match he will remember for the rest of his life.
And then when you won that astonishing test match at the MCG, there's a picture of you to win the series in the team bus on the way back to the hotel. But it obviously just, it sort of suddenly hit you. And there's tears rolling down your cheeks and you're thinking, we've done it. We've beaten them. Is that one of those memories that brings a skip to your heart?
Definitely. The amount of hidings that we'd caught from Australia over the years, especially travelling there, you got the media on your back, the crowds on your back, and to eventually get over that line and beat them, you know, is everything that we worked towards. And, you know, that, and in fact, that England tour, beating England there. So those are the two that really stood out. And, you know, we'd put so much hard work and effort into that, that to eventually achieve it and achieve it, certainly in Australia, the way that we did, chasing down that massive score. And it was a collective effort. It wasn't, you know, individuals that won us, you know, that series. Everybody put their hand up and somewhere along the line contributed. So it just made it even more special when stuff like that happens. So certainly one of my fondest memories was singing that bus on the way back to the hotel, knowing that we'd beaten Australia in Australia.
Well, Jacques, you had an incredible first half of your life. You've achieved so much on the cricket field. But in so many other ways, life's just beginning, hey? You're into the second half now. It's family time.
Most definitely. I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. We've been blessed with a young boy that's 7 months old now, and hopefully we'll try for another, and hopefully we'll be blessed with another healthy youngster in the not-too-distant future. But, yeah, it's new challenges. Like I've said, you know, I look back with fond memories of first part of my life and look forward to the new challenge of the second half. But yeah, hopefully we can be blessed with good health.
Thank you so much indeed for your time, Jacques Callis. You're looking around for your son, so I think you better go and find him. Thank you. once again, congratulations on a great career, and thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for all the support, Neil. Thank you. Cheers.
You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the great Jacques Callis. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.